broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network. This is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. I don't condone or encourage the use of any drugs, legal or illegal. I report the unvarnished truth about the pharmaceutical, banking, prison, and judicial nightmare that feeds on eternal drug war.
Welcome to this edition of Cultural Baggage. Our guests are Mr. K, our Drug Truth Network reporter. He's about a month out of his 14-month sentence for possession of a millionth of a gram of marijuana in his system. We'll also have Rusty White, who's a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. He's a former guard, a former sniper for a SWAT team, and a dog handler, and we'll be bringing them on here in just a minute. But I want to report that in Canada, the situation is getting almost as bizarre as it is here in the United States, and here to report on that from Ontario is Eugene Oscapella.
My name is Eugene Oscapella. I'm one of the founders of the Canadian Foundation for Drug Policy, and I teach criminology at the University of Ottawa. I teach drug policy there.
There's a lot of rowdy news about marijuana and the drug war going on in Canada these days. Fill us in, if you will.
The issue came to the fore because of a tragic event a couple of weeks ago. When four Royal Canadian Mounted Police RCMP officers were murdered in a farm, and the farm was the site of a chop shop, and the fellow who killed them had a very long history of violent behavior and hatred towards the police, and they actually went there to repossess a truck. It was not a raid on a grow op or anything like that, but it turns out that there was a small grow op on the premises. So the immediate reaction of senior politicians and senior police officials in Canada was to say that, look, this was a raid on a violent grow-op, and that's why these four RCMP officers died. Now, the head of the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, retracted his statement later, and he said that it was inappropriate for him to make that linkage. And in fact, I think it's quite clear that he was trying to perhaps exploit the tragedy by blaming it on drugs in some way. So, in any event, that was the issue that sort of got things going in Canada recently. But also, the U.S. drug czar, John Walters, has been saying that Canadian cannabis is a significant reason for the increasing number of emergency admissions of young people in the United States. The so-called famous BC Bud is allegedly responsible for all this. But as a colleague of mine pointed out last week, it may well be American pot that's doing this, to the extent that it is doing anything, because there's no labeling requirements on BC Bud, and because it attracts a fairly hefty price, it could well be that people are selling their own marijuana as BC Bud when in fact it's not. And of course, I think we all know how suspect some of those claims about emergency admissions are in any event.
I want to thank Eugene Oscapella for that report. We do have in studio with us Mr. K. Hello, sir.
Good evening, Dean. How are you doing tonight?
I'm real good. Many of you may recall he did reports for us both before and after his arrest. He reported to us from the Harris County Jail and gave us some of the lowdown there. Mr. K., welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back. I tell you, it's nice to be home. It's nice to have my freedom back. Still got a little time I got to take care of, but I just got to do the right thing, I guess.
It's just an outrage that you were sentenced in the first place. We do have online, I'm told, Rusty White, the former prison guard. Are you with us, Rusty?
Yes, sir.
Welcome to Cultural Baggage.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. If you would, tell the folks a bit about your history in law enforcement.
Well, I worked in maximum security prison in Arizona from 73 to 78. Much of that time was on death row and admin seg. 88 and 89, I was on a special weapons team and a canine narc dog handler and track attack dog handler.
Well, thank you for that, Rusty. Now, if I may ask, you know, you believed in the drug war, apparently. What was there a turning point? How did you become a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition?
Well, actually, I only become a member here about 8 months ago. But while I was a dog handler in Arizona, my conscience would no longer let me be a part of it. If you see the lengths that those in our profession will go to make sure that things happen, you start to lose faith in the system. Now, I must state that I am pro-cop. Always have been, always will be. And I hate what this failed policy has done to an honorable profession.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that, Rusty. That's from the heart, I can tell. Rusty, as a dog handler, you know, you train that dog to respond to certain commands and to indicate when he's perhaps found the presence of drugs. How easy would it be to change that dog's statement, that dog's position, or however it is you read the dog's finding and the discovery of drugs?
Well, number one, the dog's, only the handler can tell if it's marking on a substance. It depends on whether it's a passive mark or an aggressive mark. And these dogs work out of the love for the handler. And that's their sole purpose, is to satisfy the handler. And if chosen, there are handlers and there are dogs that the handler can make the dog mark when he so chooses. That's why I'm so disappointed in this ruling to bring dogs out on cars in public without probable cause.
Yes, sir.
It's a farce.
Well, I would agree with you immediately. Now, this doesn't apply necessarily to either one of you. I don't know if you ran into abuses like this, either as a guard or for Mr. K as a prisoner. But the UK Channel 4, BBC, is doing a special report. I think it's going to air this coming Saturday. That is called Torture Incorporated, and they talk about the savagery by dogs, people, prisoners being electrocuted with cattle prods, burned by toxic chemicals, and this happened in the U.S. jails. And they're saying perhaps this explains the horrors that were committed in Iraq. Mr. K, first off, how was your experience? Did you see any abuses while you were in?
Point blank, the only abuses I saw was when they throw canister into a unit to gas us. Mostly, something might happen in another section of the unit, but they would, you know, throw canisters in, a canister, the entire unit, so everyone, you know, would have to deal with the elements, and to pretty much to throw everyone off so that they could take total control of the entire unit. That was the only thing that I didn't agree with. Now, I understand once it becomes violent in a certain area, I understand why they use the canisters, but to do an entire unit instead of just the section that's actually having the problem, what it does is it throws everyone off in the entire unit, from the guards to the dogs to the inmates, and it creates nothing but chaos. And that's the biggest downfall I've seen in any encounter since I, you know, been incarcerated.
Thank you, Tony. Rusty, what have you seen?
Well, first off, if you go back to the one common denominator across this country and around the world, there is not one prison, nor is there one jail that drugs have not been found in. The majority of the killings and the problems that I've seen in the institution I worked in were drug-related, power control. And if you cannot keep drugs out of a totally controlled environment with 40-foot walls, with gun towers, every technology available to man, snitches, cameras, drug tests, and you can't keep it out of there, how are we going to keep it out of the United States?
You know, my experience, I've spent about 100 days in jail, 30 days at a time in three different lockups and a couple of one day, you know, holding. And it doesn't relate necessarily to the time that Tony has spent. Or we had another fella came in the studio just now, spent 13 years, and he just got out last Friday. The point, I guess, I'm trying to make is that we rob people of potential. We rob them of knowing the society that they're going to come back to. We deprive them of the knowledge with which they could perhaps make a better attempt at rejoining society. Please talk on that, Rusty.
You betcha, brother. Number one, there used to be a time in this country when if you did something, you paid your dues and that was the end of it. Well, that is no longer the case today in society. If you do something wrong, you're hung with that the rest of your life. You know, on a police scanner, if you listen to the police now and they call in your plate, everything you've ever done in your lifetime comes across that radio. Now, I can understand the officer's concern for safety, and if this person's a violent person, he needs to know that. But the fact that he was busted somewhere else, that's irrelevant to the stop, unless you're going to use that for an attempt to make probable cause to search you. You know, there's many things wrong with what's happening to today. And somebody's got to stand up, and that's why I chose to stand up, and that's why the rest of my brothers have.
Again, I want to stress to folks that they can learn more about your organization, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, by visiting their website, which is at leap, www.kay.cc. They have a speakers bureau, dozens and dozens of former prosecutors, judges, district attorneys, working mayors, wardens, etc., who have come out, who have, as I call it, Saul turns to Paul. They have seen the error of their ways and are working to make amends.
That, you are correct, brother, and I appreciate that. We're out to educate the public. Number one, there are none of us that are for drugs, period. None of us are. I was 13 years old in Casa Grande, Arizona, when I seen my first junkie do black tar heroin. His head hit the table, snot run out his nose, and he was like that for 20 minutes. And then he come back to and asked me, man, you got to try this. And at 13 years old, I knew drugs were stupid. But these people already have a monkey on their back. They don't need more harm done to them. They need assistance. Where did the compassion go in our country? The big stick don't work on people who's already at the bottom.
Rusty, you spoke of the paying the debt to society, that's just no longer the case. Now, I want to ask Mr. K., what problems have you run into in the short while you've been out?
Well, in the short while since I've been out, I've had problems. I had a daughter that had some problems. I'm dealing with those. I've had problems with my parole officer about making sure that I go to work. He said I need to find a job, a real job. I have a mother that's 78 years old. I take care of her since I've been home. She's about 14 months behind because I took care of everything before I left. My daughter's staying with me. I've lost my wife. We've split up. My son's got some problems. Everyone in my family's got problems. And I've got my own problems that I have to deal with. But the problems is that everyone else wants their problems taken care of. So it makes it difficult for everyone to deal with. And for me to go spend this time in TDC for 1,147 nanograms of cocaine in my system, where it came from, I don't know. You know, that situation is a total different story. But the problem is that it's put a mark on me, like what Rusty was saying a second ago. It's put a mark on me for the rest of my life that I'm a convicted felon for possession of a controlled substance. So I'm limited to certain people that I can go to, certain people that I can talk to, certain people that will help me or willing to help me so that I can get back on track, so I can go to work, so I can make a living for myself, take care of my family, and do the responsible thing, when all my life I've always done the responsible thing. But there's things that I have to deal with to get back into the workforce, to where before I could go walk in a contractor's office and, you know, based upon my credentials, I could get a job. Now it's, well, but you're a convicted felon, so the explanation has to come out. You know, they watch everything you do. The suspicion's there, even though I'm not a criminal per se, that I'm going to take anything from anyone. I just want to do the right thing for myself and for my family and carry on with the rest of my life. But I've run into wall after wall after wall since I've come home.
That 14 months is a pretty big hole to put in your life, is it not?
Yeah, it's very little compared to what a lot of other people that I met since I was incarcerated. But, yeah, it's a big hole to have to fill, because that's time I'll never get back. And it's a tough void to fill and come back out and to get back on track. It's this, even though it's just been 14 months, nothing compared to a lot of other people, that small amount has changed my life for my life.
All right, I want to say once again, you're listening to the Cultural Baggage Show on the Drug Truth Network. Our guests are Mr. K, who you just heard, and Rusty White. He's a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. So I want to remind folks that last week, Terry Jones of Monty Python fame was supposed to be our guest. He was unable to make it, and I did get a chance to do a brief interview with him later last week. And there's more of this available online on the 420 Drug War News Reports for Friday. But for right now, let's hear that report from the author of The War on the War on Terror, Mr. Terry Jones.
Speaking of the Python crew, I want to say that, probably speaking for millions of Americans, that we truly enjoyed the TV series and Search for the Holy Grail and Life of Brian, etc. And many of us were stoned and enjoyed it even more so because of that.
Yes, I know. It was always a bit of a surprise to us, because none of us were ever sort of into drugs at all. It's, I think we just sort of missed it. We were just a little bit too old for it, really. And I must say, when we did the Monty Python at the Hollywood Bowl, it was very odd. So there was a bit when I had to go walk into the audience, and it was the smell of marijuana was really extraordinary. I came back on stage with a totally different aspect.
Criminals get so emboldened. rip you off, thinking you're holding. Can't tell the policeman what you know. Got no recourse to the law. Bad guys duct tape and beat you. They're just looking for that easy score. They will rob, rape, and kill you. Cause we got no recourse to the law.
For hundreds of years, marijuana has been known for its ability to fight the pain and spasticity associated with multiple sclerosis. It's time to play Name That Drug by its side effects. Loss of balance, bladder and bowel control, cognitive difficulties, depression, fatigue, muscle weakness, numbness, tingling, pain, spasticity, vision changes, sexual dysfunction, and liver failure. Time's up. The answer, Avonex, approved by the FDA for multiple sclerosis.
Well, I hope you folks out there were able to name that drug by its side effects. I'm giving you all the clues in the world, all right? Once again, we do have Mr. Rusty White online with us, a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Rusty, if you will, tell us, what's been your experience? Have you had the opportunity to ever meet any of the prisoners that you had been in charge of before? Have you? Who are these people that are in prison?
They're like me and you.
Yeah?
They're some of the best people in the world doing time. And then I'm sorry to say there's some that need to be there and maybe not need to be on this earth. Unfortunately, we got them all thrown together. Right now, I don't know what the statistics are now, but for like 10 years running, the Department of Corrections was the biggest growing corporation in every state in the United States, above every Fortune 500 company. The major part of every state budget goes to the Department of Corrections. And that's why I say we're no longer into the prison world, we're into people ranching. And that's almost basically what it's become. Unfortunately, these people, like the brother you got on the show tonight, no longer can you pay your dues to society. You carry this around your neck for the rest of your life, and they still expect you to make a living and take care of your young and go forth in life in the pursuit of happiness. Well, how are you going to do that with this jacket you put on?
It's a tough road to toe. It's been real tough for me, Rusty. And like I said, I even not being locked up any more than I have been, between me and the other people that were released at the same time I was, out of the ones that I know, or the ones that I've known over the time that I've actually been in contact with and talked to at all, every one of them's hitting the same dead end I am. I've got a ministry program that's trying to help me, along with the staffing company that's trying to help me so that I can find a way to get back into society where I can go to work. And even that road's a tough road to toe, and they've dealt with this for years. So it's really difficult.
I want to throw in a thought here. I saw a report that in Texas, I think it's 35% of those who are sent back to prison do so because of minor parole or probation violations, perhaps something akin to the minor drug in the urine, or failing to keep an appointment, failing to get a job in this economy, which is bad for all of us. It seems so obscene.
It's ludicrous, brother. The question I got is, these people who are mandating these policies from the president of this country down, who are mandating these policies, how come they aren't under the same mandates we are? When is the last time a narc dog went through the White House? Or a narc dog went through Austin?
Right.
Or any city office here in any major metropolitan? When's the last time any of these people did a UA unannounced?
Amen.
Well, that's a strong point, Rusty. The judges, how about what's he got under that black robe, et cetera,
I agree 100%. If we're all going to live by these rules, let's all live by them.
There is a very glaring case of late, the West Texas district attorney who got elected for being tough on crime, who wound up being a methamphetamine, cocaine, and marijuana user, had 31 guns in his office, for God's sake. That's the type of hypocrites that we're fighting against.
And how many of them brothers did he put in jail and prison? I guarantee you, and the brother on your show today can vouch that when he goes to jail or prison, if he does, I guarantee he's going to have a very interesting time.
Yeah, it's a whole different world. Everything's changed. Everything's different. Whatever you thought was normal is no longer normal. And you just realize that every moment of every day, from about 3:30 in the morning till late at night, is controlled by someone else. And if you don't do it to a T the way they tell you to do it to a T, something's going to happen to you.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's for sure. Rusty, tell us about your experience with law enforcement. Have you begun doing working with the speaker series?
Yes, sir. I speak at the UTA, University of Texas Arlington, here in Arlington. I'm beginning to speak more and more, especially since this last ruling from the Supreme Court about using dogs on civilians without probable cause. What people do not understand is the outside of your vehicle is eminent domain, which means the public has access to your vehicle. And if drugs are so rampant in this country that they're going to force us to give up our civil rights and our constitutional rights to use dogs on us without cause, then it's asinine to think that if that is true, then it is a fact that our cars can be tainted from somebody else in the public. If I'm sitting in my car beside you and you pull up to 7-Eleven and I'm smoking marijuana and I get out and put my hand on your car, or I change your oil, or I work on your car, and I'm smoking marijuana, that scent will stay on your car for hours at freeway speed. So how can I be held accountable for something that is not under my control?
Absolutely. It brings to mind the story I heard about police officers examining currency to see if there were traces of cocaine, and yet it was found out later that perhaps 90% of the money in circulation in the United States has traces of cocaine on it.
And how do they justify taking that money? How do they, if I take my dog into any bank in this country, my dog will alert on that money. So how come we don't take the money out of a bank?
Well, they got the friends in there. That's what it is. But it is the bankers that launder the vast majority of the money that's garnered from the sales of drugs. It is the bankers who are most in cahoots with the drug lords.
The number one thing that bothers me the most about this is in this free country that we live in, a person should be held accountable for their action, not their choices. There was a time in this country when snitching on your neighbor or looking over your neighbor's fence or prying on your neighbor or snitching on your neighbor was a sin. Somewhere it's been turned around to where that is acceptable. And now they're subjugating our children in school, trying to take away their freedom and will, and testing them without reason. You know, where does it stop? Are we no longer a free nation? Are we all guilty without cause?
Yeah, I got a story about that. My daughter, at one point, they had pulled her out of population at school, at the high school she was at, and they said randomly they were going to do a urinalysis on her. Well, my daughter refused, and so they called me, which was the best thing she could do, is have them call me. They called me, and I said, so what's your reason? They said, well, there's so many drugs being used in school, we pulled your daughter out of the crowd so that we could drug test her to find out if she tested positive for drugs. Well, I told him, I said, you don't have a probable cause. She's a minor and she's my daughter. And I'll tell you right now, don't touch my daughter, send her back to class, and don't you dare approach my daughter again. Because if you do, then we'll be in court. Well, so they sent my daughter back to class, and they went and found another student. Now, they said this was random, but yet later on, I talked to the grade-level counselor, and the grade-level counselor said, well, one of the lockers around where her locker was, the dog test, marked the lockers, the area for drugs, that there had been drugs in the area, so they were randomly picking these five or six lockers, and she was the one that got picked out of the five or six.
Now, you're 100% correct, brother. Number one, you never give up your rights, especially without cause. In the schools today, they're going down and doing chemical swipes on the lockers after hours, and they'll swipe all the lockers in the school and test them, and then they'll mark the lockers where they get a hit. Now, if some girl is seeing a guy she don't know that's doing this stuff, vice versa. A guy seeing a girl. They're hanging jackets on these kids with no cause. And the saddest part to it is, the one drug, marijuana, they've been keeping records on since 1937, has never killed a human being. Never. Tobacco kills over 500,000 a year. Alcohol kills over 112,000 a year. And the one drug that's the least harmful to anybody is illegal. Now, how do you justify that to somebody that knows the truth? You know, in the old days, when the police took down a drug dealer, you made your buys, you documented it, and then you brought them out, you waited till you caught them outside the house, you slam dunked them, put the bracelets on them, and walked back in the house and peacefully searched the house. What is the reason behind terrorizing women and babies, kicking in doors, you know, and terrorizing people. If the police have done their homework, they've got enough evidence to put this person away. And they keep saying it's so they don't get rid of the evidence. Who cares if they flush it down the toilet? That's something less you got to put in the evidence locker. If you've already done your job, there is no need for these terrorist tactics. Not to mention day upon day of innocent Americans that are killed by mistake. The wrong house. The wrong address. You know, somewhere the people got to wake up and say, that's the end of this.
That's right. We've got to stand for our rights, for the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and just say, wait a minute, what's going on here? This is not my country.
That's a fact, brother. You know, when you dress everybody up the same, in order for you to make file a complaint with the FBI on a violation of your civil rights, you have to be able to identify the officer that made that violation. Well, if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, they throw the flashbang in on you, kick your door in, you got a M16 or a MAC-10 stuck in the back of your neck with your face down on the floor, and nobody has any identifying marks on them other than a police badge and says police, without no way to identify them, how do you pick out the guy that violated you?
No, that's for sure. Well, Rusty, I'll tell you what, we're going to have to call it for today. I'd like to invite you back this summer. Well, it's been an interesting discussion.
Anytime, brother. Just keep the faith, and people need to stand up.
I hear you. Thank you, my friend.
You betcha, brother.
Okay. Once again, that was Rusty White. He's from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Leap.cc on the net. Let's go ahead and get our report from Doug McVeigh.
You may have heard some prohibitionists argue that marijuana laws aren't a real problem because there are few possession offenders in prison. That's partly true. Prisons are counted separately from jails in criminal justice research. Most simple possession offenders are fined and or put in jail, on probation, or into treatment as an alternative to incarceration. In the U.S. in 2003, there were 755,000 marijuana arrests. 662,000 were for simple possession. There were only 597,000 arrests for all violent crimes combined that year. Fewer than half of violent crimes are ever cleared by an arrest. Not a conviction, merely an arrest. Imagine the extra police and court time that could be available if the authorities weren't so busy pulling up pot plants. We should also look at other pot offenses. After all, to possess it, marijuana has to come from somewhere. At least 12.9% of the drug offenders in state prison and 18.9% of the drug offenders in federal prison are serving time for marijuana offenses. Think marijuana laws are no problem? For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org.
Okay, a couple of quick program notes. I want to thank High Times and Steve Bloom for inviting us up to Austin this past weekend for the High Times Party, part of the South by Southwest event. Next week, our guest will be Mike Gray. He's the scriptwriter for The China Syndrome, some other movies. He was the director of many Star Trek episodes, and he's the author of Drug Crazy. He's also the chairman of Common Sense for Drug Policy. My friends, it's really up to you. This drug war ends when you decide it's over. As it is, these politicians tell me in private that their hands are tied. They're unable to do anything. And you know why their hands are tied? You haven't untied them. You need to call them or write them or in some way let them know that this drug war is over. And my friends, as always, I remind you, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful.
For the Drug Truth Network and our affiliates in the U.S. and Canada, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Jack dancing on the edge of the deuce.